Hi, and welcome to the PodMag. I'm Karen Foley.
And I'm Dave Middleton. Hey, we've got a welcome new listener.
Oh, absolutely, yes. If you haven't heard the PodMag before, welcome. But if you are new to the PodMag, this is our audio download each week from the Faculty of Social Sciences with news, views, current affairs.
But we've got lots going on, haven't we? And we're going to talk about the conference news in just a moment. But I am so excited about some of the news that we've got to share. So should we have the news jingle?
Yes, let's.
So come on in, Karen. First piece of news.
First piece of news is
a piece of news about two of our colleagues who are based in Cambridge, and that's Donna and Katie Smith. And they've just published a paper in the European Journal of Open and Distance Learning called The Case for Passive Learning, The Silent Community of Online Learners. And it sounds like a really interesting case study. This is about their work looking at forums and the way in which many students actually don't want to contribute to the forums in terms of typing, but they do actually learn an awful lot by their just by being there.
Now this is a very interesting point, actually, because during this week's Activate session we were talking to Ben Tamplin, hello Ben, about his use of forums, and he was saying that, you know, initially he didn't really like using forums, and now one of his modules has these activities and he's finding that he's changing his mind about them. And so what we did was we challenged him to write a blog about it, and we're going to be doing a lot of blogging, so we'll update you on that to get involved. So let us know if you're interested. Get in touch by email or visit the Student Connections website to find out more.
The website is now up and running. You get all the links there. Go to that website, which is
connections.kmi.open.ac.uk.
Now just repeat after me. The train arriving at platform
Dave,
6.
You should record this so you can just drop it in like a jingle, and we can have like connections.kmi.open.ac.uk with some really good music.
Well, let's do a jingle now.
Okay.
After three.
Then. Okay.
One, two, three.
Connections
at Open UK.
I've been warned not to. And the dean did say, none singing.
Oh, right, okay. Okay, let's have some conference news. What's happening on the conference? What's the big story, Karen?
Yeah, no, we're very, very busy planning the conference. And next week, we're going to be putting out a call for expression of interests for all of our academics and students as well. This is your time to, if you want to get involved, let us know. Just drop us an email, podmag@open.ac.uk, and let us know how you'd like to get involved. If you're keen to get involved, do let us know.
Hold on, Karen. We're going to come back to the conference. Look who's walking past.
They've been on the telly.
They've been on everything. They've been on radio, TV. It's only David Rothery.
Oh, my goodness.
Hold on, he's got someone else with him. Let's get them in. But I'm pretty sure that's one of the people that's just come back from...
Axel. He's been in Germany.
He's been to Mission Control. We must talk to them.
Yeah.
Let's get them in now.
Okay.
Okay, well, we've been joined by some really very, very special guests. Big names now in the OU and worldwide, and actually beyond worldwide, universe-wide. So... very big welcome to David Rothery, who is Professor of Planetary Geosciences, and you would have seen him if you was watching the live stream. Hi, David.
Hi, David.
Nice to see you again. And also we've been joined by Axel Hagerman, who is a Senior Lecturer in the Department of Physical Sciences and has just come back from Mission Control, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
Oh, fabulous. Well, we're going to ask you about that first. I mean, you were there when it was all really kicking off and everything was happening. What were your feelings?
Well, I wasn't really there because I wasn't on the comet, really. So I was in Cologne at the Lander Control Center. And the feeling was, well, it was very, very tense. And the biggest problem was that we didn't really get data in real time because most of the time we had to wait for the radio link.
Okay, so how fast was the data arriving?
We were talking roughly like something between half an hour, because everything that you do with the lander has to be uplinked to the Rosetta spacecraft, then it has to be sent back, sent down to the lander, and obviously the spacecraft and the lander were not always in contact, so it was, you know, quite a riveting wait, actually.
So a whole half an hour, but you've been working on this for 11 years. Half an hour is a blink of an eye, isn't it?
Not really, no, actually. When you're waiting for data and you're waiting for the fruit of your hard labor for so many years, what you really want is, you know, you want sort of an instant acknowledgement that actually you haven't made a complete mess out of it. And it was quite difficult actually waiting for so long.
And what about you, David? Because you were in Milton Keynes, and obviously there was a very different environment going on. What was it like waiting again for that data?
I didn't have the same emotional investment in this mission. I'm not on the Rosetta or the Fairlight team at all, but I was one of the people on the live stream. If people are watching that, I talked about how exciting I thought the images of a comet were, and we kept some interest going, I hope, as Phil I was descending to the surface. And when we had confirmation from Mission Control of a landing, we were all jubilant, and we signed off the program shortly after that, saying, you know, get on Twitter, get on the internet later to look at the pictures. And we all thought we'd got the probe safely on the surface. And I think Axels was one of the instruments which knew fairly quickly, but in fact, it bounced off the surface and was still flying through space for a couple of hours, didn't you, Axel?
Yes. I need to say a bit more about the instrument that I'm involved in. It is led by the Berlin Institute of Space Research. So it's effectively a German instrument that's sitting there. And what we saw, that when we got the first packets of data, they're coming in little sort of, you know, drips. So you're getting a packet of data here, a packet of data there. And what happened after the landing was, or the landing in quotes, was that we saw very quickly that things hadn't calmed down really. We could see that something was still moving, and that was our indication that something had not quite worked as planned.
Because it took quite a while until it went a kilometre, didn't it, away from the comet, and that must have been very nerve-wracking.
Yes. So the first bounce was very, very long, and what we could see was that there was this wiggling in the data, and went, something's gone wrong here. And then it turned out we got the data from the engineer telling us, the harpoons hadn't fired. I don't know how much listeners will know about the design of the spacecraft, but because gravity is so low, when you try to land on this cometary nucleus, you might also have gas drag pushing you back as well. So if you've got low gravity, potentially you've got gas pushing you away. So you're trying to hold on to this comet by, well, first of all, firing two harpoons into the surface. Now, what we saw was basically neither the harpoons had fired, nor was the thruster system operational. And when we heard that the harpoons hadn't fired, we went, oh dear, something's gone very, very wrong here. So we were very, very relieved in the end when we found out that the thing had actually landed and come to rest.
That must have been an absolutely terrible moment when you thought that you were going to lose the whole thing.
It was. And when we saw that basically this thing has gone back into space, we were really, really shocked. We went, how could this happen?
Because where it actually bounced first, or where it first hit the comet, it was a bullseye. It was exactly where they're aiming for. It would have been a great place if the probe only stayed there. But where it ended up after bouncing was underneath a low cliff, not getting very much sunlight, and that's been the problem. It had 60 hours of battery life, and I understand almost every experiment worked pretty well. It's done its primary mission, though, so we should be pretty pleased with that.
Oh, there's a lot of data. And I mean, that mass spectrometer was one of the instruments that's had the most press. But Axel, you've been working on something else, haven't you? Could you tell us a bit about that?
Well, the instrument that I worked on, as I said, it's led by the Institute for Space Research in Berlin. And their main focus is not on mass spectrometers. It is more about the thermal environment of a cometary nucleus. Because the two are very, very intimately linked, because we assume that comets are fairly pristine. They are sort of, you know, the original building blocks of the solar system, and they have stayed in a rather cold environment for quite a long time. So when we take a sample of the composition of a cometary nucleus, what we also need to know is what the temperature is like, so what the thermal environment is like, and that's what this instrument was about to investigate. It's basically, you know, it's an infrared thermometer, like the ones you can buy in DIY stores, and a proper thermometer, so like a long stick with several thermal sensors. And it was designed to measure temperatures, which is what it has done.
So we can make one ourselves at home with get a rocket, put a thermometer on and send it up.
Go ahead. There's nothing stopping you.
We recommend it to people listening at home. Right. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for giving up the time. I know you've been really busy and you've only just got back from Germany. You must be absolutely shattered.
And I hope you'll come back and tell us a bit about when you've got that data, what it all means.
I hope so too, yes.
It is exciting. No, it is exciting. Fabulous. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
Did you know one thing that I'm a bit confused about with that?
What?
Well, they were talking about these harpoons.
I know.
Now, honestly, I think actually landing on a comet with a spaceship
is very, very impressive. But to go up there and look for wows.
I know. Mean, when they don't even know if there's water. And I thought that was quite a big point.
I'm really confused by why they were doing that.
I know. No, I'm sure they had a rationale.
Well, I'm sure. I don't know whether they did. They didn't seem to.
Well, I don't know. From what I know, these people in science, they do tend to think things through.
Do they?
Unlike, you know.
Us. should we go back and have a bit more conferencey news?
Absolutely.
Roadshows, Karen, roadshows. That's what we need to talk about.
We do. We're planning some roadshows. The first of them is in Milton Keynes at Walton Hall at our very own Open University. And that is on the 2nd of December, so coming up quite soon. Now, these are going to be really fun. And again, it's your opportunity to get involved in the conference, meet Dave and I, meet some of the academics at the Open University. It's completely free, but places are limited. So to book your space, email us, podmag@open.ac.uk, with roadshow on the title. If you want a roadshow around your area and you feel you can help us promote it and get students on board, do email us and let us know. But at the minute, we're planning some events before the conference and a lot after, because Student Connections is not just about a conference. It's about connecting students within the Open University throughout your studying journey.
Okay, now, Karen, I've got to just change the subject slightly for a few seconds. Now, I did say to you that I had a very special job for you.
Yes.
Okay, here's a fiver.
Right.
Okay, this is a test of your research skills.
Right.
I want you to go across to the canteen.
Yeah.
I want you to research whether they sell anything called coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like you to bring me back a cup. There you go. Meanwhile, I'm going to phone Joe Smith. Right, let's see if I can get Joe on the phone. Okay, hi, Joe. Are you there?
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Well, thanks very much for joining us this morning. I've just been talking to people from the Rosetta Project, so I'm really excited at the moment about things that are going on. But I want to talk to you about something equally exciting, which is this week's Friday Thinker.
Thanks, Dave. Yes, I suspect I'll bring you down to earth with some fairly direct conversation about energy and how energy plays in our lives.
So what will the question actually be then? And I love that pun, by the way, I did notice.
Yeah, I can't stop it, I'm afraid, Dave. The question I'm putting is, how can we change the way we live with energy to reduce the risks of climate change? And I think pretty well everyone will have an opinion one way or another on that topic.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Now, it's obviously people are going to have strong opinions on some of these things. And I think most people are in favour of reducing greenhouse emissions and just at a little bit of a loss how they stop using the car and things like that. So I'm sure a lot of students will be very interested to hear what you have to say as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of the point of the Friday Thinker slot is that the Facebook conversation is that it's not an opportunity for me to say what I think. It's an opportunity for lots of people to get involved in a conversation about it. And I guess I want to kick off a conversation. I've focused on energy. I want to kick off a conversation about how we can think in a slightly more open, even sideways way about how humanity lives with energy. And my thinking about this is coming out of a research project that I'm leading with 12 colleagues from across the country. Instead of taking a more technical approach, we're stitching together all the insights from our different disciplines to try to open up the public imagination about how we've lived with energy in the past and the present and how we might live with it in the future.
And, wow, that sounds absolutely fascinating and brilliant. And what's that project called?
It's called Stories of Change.
And if people want to know about it, where can they find out?
If people Google for Stories of Change, they will find that web address.
Brilliant. Well, it's been fabulous talking to you, Joe. Thanks very much for joining us. I hope you have a very successful Friday Thinker. It sounds as though it's going to be a good one. So
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Dave. Bye.
Okay, thanks a lot, Joe. Ah, Karen, you're back.
Yeah, yeah,
with
Dave,
my coffee.
Yeah, actually, it's a new... It's
what
a new,
the... What is this?
It's a new thing they're doing. It's called... That one is Calming Chamomile.
Calming Chamomile?
Yeah, I thought it'd be really nice.
What have you got?
Well, I've got coffee.
But I asked for coffee.
I know, but this is calming, and they said you'd really like it.
Let me just... I mean, we did record this, didn't we?
Yeah.
We could go back and look at the recording and we'll see.
Well,
did
we
I
could,
ask,
Dave, but I was being nice and you said go and get me something and I was just using my initiative like you've told me to do.
I'm not sure that's a good thing. Plus, I think we've come to the end of this pod, Mac.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, we better say goodbye to everyone.
Okay. Right, that's all we've got time for. So have a great week and we'll catch you next Monday.
See you next week.
The Pod Mac!